Welcome to This Is Our Call, a podcast where we talk about life, theology, and the gospel. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Matthew, and Jonathan is a loud person.
How did you like that transition?
It was okay. Maybe you shouldn't cut out that first part right before the intro where you're screaming loud noises.
I'm pretty sure that people will shut the podcast off if I keep that in. And they wouldn't actually be listening to us right now, talking about it.
How you doing, Jonathan? How are you doing, Jonathan?
I'm all right. It was a long week, rough week in more ways than one, from work wasn't bad. It was a stressful, chaotic week of expecting things to be given to me at a certain point in time, and then they were not delivered upon in that time frame. And then, having the crunch time of holidays, because evidently Monday's Christopher Columbus Day, and even though no one else gets off,
banks are closed,
and teachers still have to work, even though kids don't have to go to school. Julie made me chuckle this week.
That doesn't make sense to me, by the way.
What?
That kids are in, but teachers going. I don't understand that.
Well, here's what's even better. So in Wake County, Julie had. Wednesday was a teacher work day because it was like, what are they called? Interims or whatever. I guess that's what they are. So
yeah,
progress reports. And then she has Monday off too, but she has to work still. But it's whatever. It's okay. So other than that, everything's good. I had one of those great dad moments last night with Reagan. So long week, stressful week. I could just feel myself like really, really kind of stress intense. And I get home and Julie's there with Reagan holding her, and Reagan sees me and she, you know, pulls her arms out and's like, "Hold me, Dad." And then I pick her up and I hold her and she just wraps her arms around my neck. And it was like that moment of like every stress just kind of drained from me. And it was great. It was a good moment. My heart kind of fluttered. So.
Well, I'm glad it ended well for you.
Yeah. And then I was able to relax and did a little favor for our youth pastor.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I'm glad he didn't call me.
I figured he called me first. I was like, Matt would have just been like, "You had a date night last night, right?"
Yeah, we were on a date, so I had a perfect time. It was good.
How was dating your wife?
Dating my wife was good. It was good. We didn't exactly do everything we had initially planned to do.
Like that ever happens.
But it was fun.
Was it an actual date or did you just run errands?
No, it was a real date. I mean, we went to Chili's and the plan originally was to go to Durant Park first and walk around some, then go to Chili's, but Anna wanted to eat first, so then we went to eat first, but
it gets dark pretty early now.
And so instead, right afterwards, we went to the seminary to walk around instead.
Okay.
And then
that's still a good place to walk around.
Yeah, it is. And then so we talked for a while and then we were going to go get ice cream afterwards and then hit it home. So it was good.
Cool. Where'd you get ice cream at?
Where else, dude? Do you really even have to ask?
Did you go to Lumpy's?
Yes, I went to Lumpy's. It's the only place to get ice cream in Wake Forest if you want good, good ice cream.
I mean, there's a couple other places that are pretty decent. It just depends on what ice cream you want.
If you want good homemade ice cream.
If you want good hard ice cream, you go to Lumpy's.
Lumpy's is
the place to go. If you want soft serve ice cream, to me, it's a tie between Dairy Depot and Dairy Queen. Just because Dairy Queen is the original. To me. I know someone's going to like shun me on that one.
Yeah.
And if you want, I guess you could call it frou-frou ice cream, but ice cream with stuff smashed in it, you want to go to Cold Stone.
I like Cold Stone. Cold Stone's a safe bet. If you don't know where you are, but there's a Cold Stone, you're going to get good ice cream.
Yeah. Along with Dairy Queen.
Yeah. But if you're in Wake Forest and you want.
You want good quality homemade ice cream.
Lumpy's is the place
with different flavors.
Unique flavors too.
Like
they always have your regulars, you know, vanilla, chocolate, all that kind of stuff.
This doesn't sound really bad, but I love his beer ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Like he takes beer from the local brewery, like literally that's down the street from him, a couple blocks away, and he'll make ice cream out of it, and it is just
on point.
It is so good. I haven't had a bad one. I tried it there. Just I was like, I've got to try this. Although he's got like a. It's not a jalapeno. It's like a ghost pepper ice cream.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I tried a sample. It was just kind of weird.
Yeah, peppers and ice cream.
It just didn't work for me.
Yeah, it was just.
Maybe some people love it. I just.
He makes a small batch. I think it's just kind of like a, hey, I make this.
We're going to experiment.
Yeah. But he doesn't serve like a full, like, serving of it, which is fine.
So today we wanted to talk about something.
Ice cream.
No, yeah. We're not. In the Gospel of Jonathan, chapter
Actually,
1.
It's John. Jeez.
Anyway, we thought
you don't even
we
know
would.
Your Gospels.
I know. I thought we would talk maybe about more of a sensitive topic. Not really, also not necessarily just directed to men, although I think that's typically where this is directed towards. But women wrestle with this too. Maybe not to the degree I think men do, just in regards to how we're wired and how we're bent towards different types of sin. But I thought it would be good if we talked just for a little bit about the desire to be pure, really a wrestle with lust, and maybe defining what that is and how that tends to manifest itself. And how do we combat that? Is that something we can win? Is that something we can win against, fight against? How do we do that? Like, what does that look like? And so I thought that would be maybe a bit more of a sensitive topic, and maybe we just highlight maybe two or three things after kind of walking through what that is, what that looks like, that might be useful to people in regards to really fighting sin and driving for purity and holiness and how that looks. So take it away, Jonathan.
Take it away.
Here we go. Three points. Go. Bam.
So I think first off we need to start with like a definition of what lust is. So what I've got is lust is basically it's a sinful longing, the inward sin which leads to the falling away from God. So basically, lust for so many people is just a sexual temptation. But I would say it could actually be more. Would you agree?
You know, I would agree. But ironically, I remember my first year in seminary, I actually wrote a paper on lust.
Of course you did.
I did. And I actually argued that the definition of lust extended beyond just sexual desire. And my professor hammered me on that. He just did not like that at all.
And well, it's understood that the word lust has become more narrow in its meaning since the writing of like the King James version.
That's true.
Because King James, like in the King James, everything's lust.
I think lust can apply to more, but I think in our culture and time specifically right now, lust almost always means
yes
something sexual.
Yeah. So I think it's always good for us to define, you know, what we're meaning. And so I think when we're talking about lust, we're going to specifically be referring to sexual desires over other things. Yes, the word has meant both, but in more modern phraseology and terms, lust is more directed at a sexual sinful desire or longing.
I also think this is important to talk about because I think it's a silent battle in a sense where I think here's what's weird. I think this is particularly a wrestle maybe within Christian circles, because I think our culture at large has embraced like sexual promiscuity and openness. I read an article the other day about someone who was openly and braggingly discussing their sexual lifestyle and how much sex they had and what that looked like. And I was just like, even 10 years ago, this would not have really, not that those articles weren't there or out there, but they weren't like front page and like highlighted. And
well, it's not even that. I mean, just even in common talk in public, like when I worked at Starbucks, I worked there for like 3 years, and some of the conversations I had with people were very uncomfortable, even for an ex-public school kid. It was just awkward. It's like, why are you?
I look at you like public. I'm public school, so therefore.
I've been like. Let's be real. Public school kids have been exposed generally more to things of this world than those that are in private or homeschooled. Generally.
Okay. Thank you for that.
I don't want to exclude. You know, you got to be a PC and all that jazz. I don't do good at that. Anyway, so I would have conversations and guys would just be like the regulars. It was always the regulars. And they would just start talking about these random, like, disgusting things. And I'm just like, why are you having this conversation with me? I'm obviously not actually interacting with you. But like the biggest thing, like swingers are a big thing now. You're in a committed married relationship, but yet you're swingers, which is just
that's weird to me.
Weird, awkward, and wrong on so many levels.
And there's almost a sense in which in our culture, it's like if I say I was a virgin my whole life till I got married, people are like, you're weird. And then on top of that, there's almost a sense, and with a lot of people, I need to be careful when I'm getting ready to say, I know many people that I've got great relationships with that are in hashtags, quotations, committed relationships. They're not married, but there's no interest in getting married because they're living together and sleeping together. The only difference is they have separate bank accounts. And to them, well, what's the difference in marriage? What's the big deal about marriage? Isn't marriage just saying?
I've had a friend in the past that they were married and they still had separate bank accounts.
So maybe we need to do a whole episode at one point just about marriage and what that means. But you know, specifically, I think for us right now, talking through this, I think what I mean by this is kind of a silent topic within the church is our culture has embraced this promiscuity that's not
promiscuous
okay.
Promiscuous lifestyle.
But our church equally, I think, makes it difficult for people to openly, even in accountability, to say, man, I'm really wrestling with this. And
I think
you have to say, you know, am I free to talk about that? You know,
yeah, I feel like there's this when men in particular, not that women don't struggle with this. I know that they do. It's just, it's different. And I don't, as a male, I fully understand it just because it's different. But I feel like within the church, you have almost two, maybe three responses to lust and wrestling with it. And with the lust comes, you know, pornography addictions and promiscuous relationships. And so you have the one extreme of the church just doesn't talk about it. And it's like, it's bad juju to talk about it. Like this is a no fly zone. We don't talk about this.
I really want to say something that's probably inappropriate right now.
Just let's move on. And then okay. You have the other extreme where if you say you struggle with this, you have no business being in the church, which is, granted, the extreme. So I'm talking about extremes here.
Sure.
Extreme of they don't talk about it, don't mention it, and the extreme of you're not even saved because you deal with this. I think we need to find somewhere in the middle to come to that.
And let me just say, too, I want to broaden our definition here. We're talking about lust. We're not just talking about a woman's lust for a man or a man lusting after a woman. It also could encompass someone who's struggling with homosexual lust, right? I think that falls into that category as well. And just as a side note, for especially if you're younger guys, I think this is typical with guys, not as much as younger guys, I should say. I don't hear a lot of adult men doing this, but when I was growing up, it was typical and normal for guys, not just in the church, but just in general, to make a lot of gay jokes and joke about that. I mean, it was
it's
normal.
It's not very politically correct anymore.
It's not politically correct anymore, but that it was.
It wasn't politically correct then. It was just.
I don't know. It was just normal, I guess.
It's the way that people deal with things that they're uncomfortable with.
And that kind of was also in the church. And I'll never forget, I was speaking at a, it's kind of like a fall retreat. I don't think it was a fall retreat. I can't remember. You weren't with me for this one, but it was when I was doing the Liberty Link stuff at Liberty, and I was at a church. I can't even remember the name
Liberty
of the church now.
Link, man.
I know.
Throwback.
And we broke up into some small groups, and I had one of the kids, the guys were making some gay jokes and stuff, and we were kind of chuckling, and so one of the kids pulled me aside afterwards and just said, "Hey, you know, I'm really wrestling with homosexuality. Like, not I just I'm lusting after this." And it struck me that all of his friends were joking about this. And I think that was the last time I ever told a gay joke. Really, I mean, it just struck me that there were people that I was ministering to that might be struggling with this that I had no idea about. And I was unintentionally poking fun of this a little bit. And so I just wanted to stop and mention that I think when we're talking about lust, this encompasses this too. So all that to say, you know, a sexual desire in a wrong way, it's wanting something that doesn't belong to you. right? And in addition to all that, it's not real.
Yeah, right? we build it up in our minds to be this glorious thing that we just have to have in order to be complete. As someone who struggled with an addiction to pornography through middle school and high school, it was this fantasy of this is the climax of what, you know, the goal is. This is the goal. This is what to achieve.
And it dehumanizes the other person too.
Yeah,
right?
I feel like that's the worst part of it all. Is like when you have that addiction as a male to pornography, like you are dehumanizing the people that you're lusting after, the women that you're lusting after, and it's awful because it brings those, whether you want to or not, those all those feelings and how do I want to say this? All those feelings and unrealistic realities that you've played in your mind don't exist in real life.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. And in addition to that, especially if you're married, like lust erodes, it can erode, I don't want to say erode, it damages your marriage.
How would you say that?
Because it is something that is intimately sacred between you and your wife is now there's something else in between there. And B, what lust is and what pornography is not what real sex is. Not at all. It's devoid of, we've kind of talked about this already. It's dehumanized, right? B,
they're women and men become objects.
Right.
And when we say it's dehumanizing, like it's an object that I must have rather than a
person created
my wife that is a beautiful creation of God that I should cherish and love. It's an object
absolutely
that I must attain.
And then B, the scriptures talk about this mingling of souls that occurs in marriage. And so not just in sex, that sex itself is a mingling of souls, not just,
it's not just physical.
It's not just physical. It is spiritual as well. And that's why, I think that's why people are left empty outside of that type of committed marriage in regards to sex, because it's not satisfying. It's just not. It's not satisfying. So anyway, all that to say, we thought it'd be good to discuss this, define this a little bit, and provide some encouragement in a way of just a couple of points that we thought would be helpful in regards to battling against this, fighting against this.
And why? Why should we do that? Like, why do we have to battle against this? If society has embraced it, why should we as Christians and as believers butt up against that and fight that, fight where society's going? I think it's simple to say that Jesus has called us to be pure. In Matthew 5, verse 8, it says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." And so in that moment, God is calling us to be pure in heart in order to see him, because it starts, so point one that we want to make is that in order to conquer, win, have victory over lust in your life, over this addiction you have in your life, it starts with knowing your sin and hating your sin.
So what do you mean by hating your sin, Jonathan?
So hating your sin is just, it's this moment in your life in which you have to, we were reading this article on desiring God, and this sentence that he wrote was just, it was this moment, this aha moment of like, yeah, that's true. You should pray that the Spirit of God will help you grow in hatred of what God hates.
Interesting prayer.
Like, it's a very interesting prayer, and the fact that God has called us to be pure, God has called us to flee the wicked, to flee lust, to flee those moments, and yet, in society today, like we are told and we are encouraged to run towards it, to accept it, that this is normal, like these are normal things that you should desire, and God is calling us not to do those things. And so we need to be quote unquote countercultural in that, in the fact that we have to hate our sin. You will not be able to conquer something that you secretly love.
Yeah, I think Psalm 119, right? Through your precepts, I get understanding, God. Therefore, I hate every false way. And I think in that vein, shout out to this guy. I mean, his point really was this, that no one who still loves sin will genuinely ask Jesus to empower him to slay it.
Yeah, it's just like you've said to our high schoolers several times, that which lives in the dark will die in the light.
Yeah, definitely.
So think about it this way. Because in the church, lust has become this taboo that you don't really want to talk about. And then you've got the other extreme where you're shunned for it. It becomes this secret hidden sin that you only experience in the dark. It's in the dark recesses of your life, of your mind.
And it's the temptation is to think that this only impacts me too, right?
Yeah.
It only impacts me. It doesn't impact anybody else.
I mean, yeah, that's where I was. I mean, when I was sadly deep in it, like it was, you know, this is me. This isn't touching anyone else. And then, quote unquote,
when did you realize it didn't touch anyone? Like, when was the, like, okay, this does have impact on other people?
When my family found out. it was one of, I guess you could say it was one of the more embarrassing moments of my life. And that's what's funny. Like, think about it. Like, when you have that addiction to pornography and no one else knows, or at least you think you've fooled everyone, just letting you know you haven't. You justify time and time again why you should do it and why it's okay and why this is normal, why this is natural. And then when someone finds out, you're embarrassed and you're ashamed. If it's okay, then why do you have those feelings?
I think the thing that's challenging about that, though, is now there are people in our culture that have no shame about it at all.
I think that's just I think there's shame originally. Like, whether people want to admit it or not, I think when you first get into it and it's this new thing, there's a shame behind it. And then
I think your conscience becomes seared a little.
Yeah, your conscience becomes seared. You become your heart becomes hardened to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just like why am I forgetting his name? When God hardened his heart, Saul.
I'm not sure where you're going with this. You're talking about Pharaoh?
Pharaoh, yes, sorry.
Saul? He's a you. Paul, sorry. I mean, what are you talking about?
Anyways, so God hardens Pharaoh's heart. Like, it's that same thing of your heart becomes hardened, and you become desensitized to those issues and to those feelings because you continually justify it in your mind. And so the beginning of winning in the lust battle is you have to start to hate your sin, because God will not give you the power to conquer something that you love. He can, but you're not giving it over to him.
And how do you know if you hate your sin? I think it's that statement we made just a second ago, that no one who still loves sin will genuinely ask Jesus to empower him to slay it. And listen, this is a battle that Jesus is saying to us, and really to all sin, look, don't try to do this on your own. Let me fight this battle, right? Get on your knees and say, Jesus, I need you here. And this, we talked about, did we talk about Mark 9 a couple episodes ago? I can't remember if we did or not.
Mark 9? We talked about Luke 9.
So I think it's in Mark 9 where the man with a daughter who is dying on her deathbed comes to Jesus. He finds Jesus and he says, my daughter's dying. Master, will you come heal her? And he goes, of course. And he starts coming with him. And then someone from his family comes to him while they're on their way. And Jesus, they get waylaid a little bit, right? The woman touches his cloak and the crowds around him. They're moving slow. And they come to this man and they say, don't bother now. Your daughter has died. Okay. And Jesus turns to him and says, do you believe? And he goes, in this moment of transparency, he goes, I do. Lord, help my unbelief. And I think that's kind of the cry we need here with this is...
Matthew 9.
Excuse me, that's it. Mark 9. I knew it was in a chapter 9. Matthew 9. Matthew 9. I knew it was in a chapter 9 somewhere in the gospel.
It's okay. We'll forgive you.
Hey, at least I didn't call Pharaoh Saul, so
no,
just saying.
No, I was thinking, this is okay. Don't worry about it. Get it later.
So, but this moment of transparency this guy has... I believe, but help my unbelief. God, help my unbelief. And I think that's where we are a lot with this, is to need to get on our knees. God, I believe that you are able to overcome this, help my unbelief here.
Yeah, I think that flows perfectly into the next point we want to make is that the second step after you hate your sin, after you hate this sin of lust, you have to seek Christ, and not only seek Him, but you have to be fully satisfied in Christ daily.
So I think that bears itself out in things. This is maybe really simple, but things in like the fruit of the Spirit, right? So like Galatians 5:22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joys.
Now, joy. Is the fruit of the Spirit, is it multiple fruits or is it one fruit, Matt?
Let's not. Let me just read the verse here, okay? The Spirit of, now I got to start from the beginning. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Again, such things, there is no law. And those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires.
Yeah, it's we have to daily feed ourselves to seek Christ, because if that hate is just hatred and we're not filling ourselves with Christ, we're setting ourselves up for failure. Because at first you will hate the sin because you will know that it's wrong, whether it's by good or bad means. But the solution is that daily you have to fill yourself with Christ. That means getting into the Word. That means praying and constantly seeking Christ.
And I think there's a transformation that begins to happen. And Paul mentioned this. He mentions this in Romans 7, and he says, "Wretched man that I am." Who will deliver me from this body of death? And Paul recognizes that there are these things in me. Who's going to deliver me? Christ is. And how does that happen? That happens by a daily pursuit after Him. That happens through an intentional pursuit and prayer after Christ. That happens by an intentional pursuit in the Word and by beholding of Jesus Christ and being transformed by beholding Him into one degree of glory to the next. And then all of a sudden, we sing with the psalmist in Psalm 16, I think it's verse 1 or verse 11, somewhere in Psalm 16, he says, "At your right hand, God, are pleasures forevermore." And all of a sudden, we begin to realize that the most satisfying thing to the soul is really God alone.
Yeah, 1 John 3, anyone who has this hope fixed on him being Christ, purifies himself just as he is pure.
And I think the important thing here is some of these things I think seem, especially if you're in the middle of this struggle, seem impossible.
Yeah, it's insurmountable. Like, you feel as though you've been in it for so long. And trust me, like, I was there. Like, middle school and high school were those dark days for me. It was also days in which Christ was calling me to Him more and more. And because I had been in it so long, I just felt like it was this insurmountable thing that I could not overcome. And yet, I finally had my Ephesians 2, my but God moment, and was like, but God is greater than this. Because God has saved me, God has purified me, and sin has no hold on me. And I think that's where we need to take our strength and our confidence, is that Christ alone can set us free.
That's good. I think, so that was number two, right? So just to repeat this again. So number one, hate your sin. Number two, satisfy, dwell deep into who God is, right? Let yourself be satisfied with Christ and Christ alone. And I think if there's a third one, and maybe this is kind of wrapped up in the first two, really, maybe it doesn't even need to be said, but we'll say it anyway, put to death the desires of the flesh.
Yeah, it's kind of, I guess you say it's almost like the final phase of knowing that once you've hated your sin, and you're fully immersing yourself in the Word and in Christ, and Christ is everything to you, then Christ will show you where you need to put those deeds and those desires.
This is Colossians 3:5, right? So put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Put to death these things in you. So, again, 1 Thessalonians 4:3, for this is the will of God, that your sanctification, that you abstain from sexual immorality. And I think saying this sounds really easy. Well, just put it to death. And And I think what Jonathan and I are trying to say is it's the opposite. And furthermore, God knows that you're not able to do it. This is why Paul says this. Who's going to say in Romans 7, he says, who's going to save me from this wretched body of death? Wretched man am I, right? Who can save me? How can I do that? I cannot do this. I do the very thing I don't want to do. And then he says, praise be to God, you know, for Christ Jesus. Like, thank God for Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Romans 8:13. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of your body, you will live. And I think that's an important phrase to catch is, but if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds. It's not, but if you put your deeds to death, then the Spirit will allow you to live. No, it's by the Spirit you can put your deeds of the flesh to death. That it is nothing apart from God, you are unable to put your flesh to death by yourself. You cannot do it apart from God. Yeah, and so often we try to do that.
I think to what we were kind of talking earlier, you feel like you're sinking in this. I think on Matthew 14:30 for a little bit, but when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. And what did Jesus do? Jesus immediately reached out his hand and he took hold of him, saying to him, oh, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? Right. And this kind of harkens back to what I was saying with Matthew 9, like, Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. Help my unbelief. There is victory to be had here.
So this is
winnable.
Okay, so when we say this, so that was my next question was, so is what we're saying right now is if I do A, B, and C, then I will never have another lust problem in my entire life?
No, I don't think there's a – I think what we're trying to say here is this is something that is conquerable. Just like any other sin area in your life that you can – that Jesus is going to cut out of you, right, by pursuing Christ, this is one area to cut out. That Jesus can take a scalpel and just carve it out. That does not mean to say that we are not going to be tempted again. But I think it's possible to have victory here.
So when you're saying by victory, it means that this sin, you can put this sin to death,
yes,
with the power of Christ. It no longer has a hold or a place on you. But there will be temptation.
There's going to be temptation. But then we have this encouragement that take heart, for there's no temptation that... I was waiting for you to fill it.
Sorry,
finish it out,
I was reading something else. You caught me on a bad moment.
I'm sorry. You want to try again?
No.
Basically, there's no temptation that's overtaking you. That's not common to man, right? That Jesus, that God has said, look, I'm not going to allow you to be tempted beyond what you can handle, right? Yeah. I'm here. I've got this.
You like saying that. I've got this. Jesus is the ultimate I got this.
Yeah.
I got this, bro.
Got your back, bro.
So the important thing to know is that we are not saying that if you do A, B, and C, then this is the secret sauce or the recipe to never have this issue again. But what we're saying is that if you're diligent in this strategy, and I think Matt and I can speak from experience that being diligent in this strategy will give you victory, and it will no longer have a hold on you, and Christ will continue to give you the strength to overcome this. And that you must be diligent in pursuing that so that he may be glorified in all that you do.
Yeah, I absolutely, yes, that's true. And I just think I think that's the battle strategy. Like, that is the battle strategy that leads to victory. And if I were to add one additional thing to that, the way to bring this into the light is through accountability.
Yeah, we've reiterated this over and over again. Accountability is so important just day in and day out that we can have someone to live life with that knows us and knows where we're at. So, Matt, where can they find us?
Well, Jonathan, they can find us on Twitter at This Is Our Call. Also, Instagram at This Is Our Call. We are also on the World Wide Web.
Wow, haven't heard a call that know, in years.
At thisisourcall.org/podcast, specifically for the podcast. Drop us a line there via mailbag. We'll get that message. And you got a question, ask us. We may even feature it as a whole episode. Do a mailbag episode. please feel free to drop us a like, give us reviews. We would greatly appreciate it. If you wanted to share with your friends, we're on all major platforms, guys. So please give us a like, share it, social media, be great. Till the whole world knows, Jonathan.
This is our call.